There were, of course, 9 rings of power for mortal men, and the men who wore them became the Nazgul. But how powerful were those rings? And did they have different powers, like the 3 elven rings, or were they all the same? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. If you like theories, background, history and lore about The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher, this is the place for you. Welcome. This video is sponsored by War Thunder. Stick around for more from them. We know the rhyme, of course, of there being 9 rings for mortal men doomed to die, and we understand that they were given to the men who became the 9 ringwraiths, but are they really just generic magic rings? The 3 elven rings all have names and specific powers. I did a video on that elsewhere on this playlist if you're interested. So what about the 9? What do we actually know about how powerful they were and what powers they had? Let's start by recapping on the history. Sauron devised his cunning plan to create rings of power that would ultimately be under his control about 1200 years into the Second Age. He disguised himself as Annatar and ingratiated himself with Celebrimbor, the elven craftsman, and over many years, literally about 3 centuries, they crafted 16 rings of power. The 7 that ended up with the dwarves, and the 9 we're talking about here that ended up with humans. But at the time they were just the 16, and all intended for elves, which is probably the first important point. Celebrimbor may have done some other different things to the 3 elven rings, but the 9 and the 7 were forged as the 16, so were presumably roughly the same. After Sauron had forged those rings with Celebrimbor, he headed back to Mordor to forge the 1 master ring, while Celebrimbor forged the 3 that ended up with the elves, free from Sauron's influence. This was when Sauron's plan started to go wrong, as he put on his Master Ring, which he had hoped would gain him control over whoever wore those other rings. The elves realised what was going on and took off their rings. Celebrimbor handed over the 3 he had made on his own to some trustworthy elves, Galadriel and Gil-galad. Sauron, sensing the ruse was over, then launched an attack on Eregion. He succeeded and captured the 16 rings that were there and set about distributing them to other people. His plan clearly didn't work with elves, so 7 went to the 7 dwarf realms. In some versions of the Legendarium, Celebrimbor had already given one to Durin the 3rd, but you get the point. That meant that sometime around the year 1700 of the Second Age, Sauron had 9 rings left in his possession. He'd tried the elves, he could be patient to see what happened with the dwarves, so that left humans. The Silmarillion picks up the story from there. To men, he gave 9. For men proved in this matter, as in others, the readiest to do his will. And all those rings that he governed, he perverted, the more easily since he had a part in their making, and they were accursed, and they betrayed in the end all those that used them. This, of course, was Sauron's plan. He kept the 1 ring for himself, and through that controlled those who used the other rings. But who were they, these 9 humans? The short answer is that we don't know exactly, but if you dig through the various collections of Tolkien's notes and unpublished works collated and edited by Christopher Tolkien, we can find some hints. Thank you to War Thunder for sponsoring this video. War Thunder is the most comprehensive vehicle combat game ever made and is available now for free on PC, consoles and mobile devices. Take command of over 2,500 tanks, planes, helicopters and ships of 10 major nations, ranging from biplanes and armoured cars of the 1920s to the fighter jets and main battle tanks of today. Immerse yourself in the intense combat of War Thunder, where incredibly detailed vehicles, realistic graphics and authentic sound effects place you right at the helm of the most powerful war machines of our time. Join a worldwide community of over 95 million players in epic PvP battles today and delve into the breathtaking experience that is War Thunder. With an unmatched wealth of high-quality content to discover, there's simply no game better suited for fans of military history. One thing I like about this is that you can play the game in the mode that works for you. War Thunder offers 3 distinct modes, each ramping up realism progressively. Arcade suits those craving fast-paced matches with enhanced vehicle performance and simplified physics, while Simulator mode ditches all guardrails for the ultimate challenge. Realistic mode, the perfect middle ground, strikes a balance between intensity and authenticity. However you choose to play, you'll find it here. I personally recommend using the customization function so you can have historically accurate markings, decorations, and even camouflage. Also, War Thunder has one of the most sophisticated vehicle damage models in gaming. Every vehicle is intricately modelled down to its individual components, like engines, fuel tanks, weapons and crew, all susceptible to damage or disabling from enemy fire, and different types of armour, shells and missiles behave like their real-world counterparts. Play War Thunder now for free on PC, PlayStation, Xbox or mobile devices. Use my links in the pinned comment or video description to sign up. New players, and those who haven't played in 6 months, will also receive a massive bonus pack on PC or consoles that includes multiple premium vehicles, the exclusive vehicle decorator, Eagle of Valor, 100,000 Silver Lions, and 7 days of premium account, available for a limited time only. The leader of the Nazgul, and indisputably the most powerful, was the Witch King of Angmar. The Angmar part of his title is a reference to where he ruled in the early part of the Third Age, rather than where he came from, though. Instead, he was probably one of the three great lords of Numenor that were tempted into accepting Rings of Power. The Numenorians were the height of human power. Even millennia later, Aragorn's superhuman lifespan and abilities stems largely from his heritage. So it makes sense that the most powerful of the new Ringbearers was Numenorian. We know the name and place of origin of one of the others, Cumhul, the Easterling. He rose to be second in command of the Nine. As for the other five, we simply don't know. It makes sense, though, that they were spread geographically around Middle-earth. Sauron's plan was to conquer all the peoples of Middle-earth, not just a few corners of it. And as for what positions they all held when they received the rings, again, we don't know, other than that the Numenorians were great lords. But it makes sense for Sauron to pick the most powerful people he could. The Rings of Power seem to multiply the existing power of their holders, hence hobbits being relatively resistant to the One Ring's power, and Gandalf and Galadriel daring not to even touch it. So these will have been lords, kings, magic users and the like, those who have power and want more. So the Nine Rings were given to 9 powerful humans in various places in Middle-earth, including 3 in Numenor and at least 1 to the Easterlings. The Silmarillion picks up the story again. Those who used the Nine Rings became mighty in their day, kings, sorcerers and warriors of old. They obtained glory and great wealth, yet it turned to their undoing. They had, as it seemed, unending life, yet life became unendurable to them. They could walk, if they would, unseen by all eyes in this world beneath the sun, and they could see things in worlds invisible to mortal men, but too often they beheld only the phantoms and delusions of Sauron. And one by one, sooner or later, according to their native strength and to the good or evil of their wills in the beginning, they fell under the thraldom of the ring that they bore and under the dominion of the One, which was Sauron's, and they became forever invisible, save to him that wore the ruling ring, and they entered into the realm of shadows. There's a lot in there, but first, whoever these 9 were when they received the rings, they became mighty rulers, magic users, and conquerors. The power of the rings increased their own powers and ambitions and abilities, much like the One Ring can. In addition, the 9 rings could turn their bearers invisible when they wanted, and allow them to see things on the ethereal plane. An unscrupulous mind could think of 1,000 uses for that to help build power. In their day, they must have been some of the most powerful people in the whole world, and most people probably didn't know the source of their power. And their natural lifespans were extended, so their reign and rule would have been long, until slowly they descended into the wraiths we know. As an aside, this actually plays against the theory that perhaps one of the Nazgul might have been a Numenorian king. We know how they died, and none of them slowly faded from the mortal plane. The Nazgul, the Ringwraiths as they now were, first officially appeared in the year 2551 of the Second Age, though I suspect some of the Ringholders fell before others. Still, that's perhaps up to 800 years or so of slowly fading. Gollum, for comparison, had the One Ring for less than 500 years, and he used it less than you might think. You don't need to be invisible in the pitch black under the Misty Mountains, for example. Intriguingly, we have no physical description of the 9 rings themselves, perhaps because once the bearers were under his control, Sauron took the rings from them and kept them himself. At least, that's what the consensus view is among scholars. It's likely to be another of those things Tolkien changed his mind on over time. At the Council of Elrond, Gandalf mentions the 9 the Nazgul keep, but in Unfinished Tales we read that the Nazgul were entirely enslaved to their 9 rings, which Sauron now himself held. And in one of his letters, Tolkien wrote about Sauron and the Nazgul that Sauron, still through their 9 rings, which Sauron held, had primary control of their wills. Which explains why Frodo, as ring-bearer, can see Galadriel's ring when no one else could, but doesn't notice any rings on the fingers of the Nazgul when he sees them, though he clearly looks at the Witch King's hand. We do have one hint, though, about how they might have looked. At the Council of Elrond, Gandalf notes that the Nine, the Seven, and the Three each had their proper gem, unlike the One Ring, which was plain and unadorned, which implies that they weren't all the same, and may have had different powers. Take the three elven rings as an example. Vilya was set with a sapphire, Nenya with adamant, and Narya with a ruby. And although they shared many characteristics, it's clear that they also had their own abilities. Gandalf's dependence on fire magic, fireworks lighting the way, fiery pine cones making damp logs burn, and so on, was surely because he possessed Narya, the ring of fire, set with a ruby. It's a reasonable assumption that the Nine were the same. They shared a particular set of abilities, but each one offered additional power in different ways. One, given to a great warrior, might bestow great strength. Another, given to a leader, might make them very persuasive, and so on. Sadly, we will probably never know, or have seen their unique powers, because Sauron took them back at some point, probably well before the start of The Lord of the Rings. The point about these rings, though, is that this is how we see what Sauron's plan was for the Rings of Power, how it was supposed to work. The three elven rings escaped the taint of his personal involvement in their forging, the seven dwarven lords proved more resistant to the ring's powers than anticipated, but the nine rings, this was what Sauron intended. More of East and South Middle-earth fell under his control, Numenor fell into increasing decline, other nations weakened. Surely much of this was down to the power of those rings, and the ring-bearers being under the control of Sauron. That was what he wanted to happen to the elves in the first place. If we're looking for a distilled version of Sauron's plan, this is it. Humans were more susceptible to a lust for power than elves or dwarves, and so ultimately they came under the ring's control more easily. For a long time, they must have thought that they were in control, but once they realized, it was too late. The tragedy of the Nine Rings and their bearers is that it wasn't Sauron forcibly taking control of the ringholders, it was them and their desire for power that led to their own end. And that's it for this video. But before you go, please make sure to check out today's sponsor, War Thunder, and blow up some tanks. Play the game now for free on PC, PlayStation, Xbox, or mobile, using my links in the pinned comment or video description. Those of you who haven't played War Thunder yet or are returning after a break of at least 6 months will receive a massive bonus pack on PC and consoles, including premium vehicles, 100,000 silver lions, and 7 days of premium account for a limited time only. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.